All right, welcome back to the Dunk Dunk Basketball Podcast. It's weird to actually do a show 2 days in a row here, but we are continuing our over-unders with the West today. We did the East yesterday, so you can go back and listen to that one if you want to get our takes there. And Danny is joining me as usual. Let's start with our good friends, the Dallas Mavericks. I don't know why they're our good friends, though, because we are totally objective about every team.
Dallas is tough. So they won 42 games last year. They made a series of notable changes, and their line is set at 39.5. I wavered on this one a lot. I ended up going under because there are a lot of reasons to think, actually, that they could be, you know, about the same as they were last year, maybe even a little better. Chandler Parsons missed 21 games last year. Wes Matthews coming back from injury. Pachulia versus Bogut is a different equation, but it could help them defensively. But when a team punches over their weight, like I think they did last year, the bet is for them to go down a little bit, and that would be enough to put them to the under. A
lot of injury risk on this team. Dirk Nowitzki is going to miss some time just for maintenance, even though he's been very healthy over the course of his career. Andrew Bogut, hard to believe that he's going to play more than about 65 games, and also just will suffer from nagging injuries that can really limit his effectiveness at times, an extraordinarily inconsistent player. Matthews, an Iron Man, other than when he came back from the Achilles. So I think we could expect him to have a little bit better of a year this year with his shot, with his explosion inside. But then between Deron Williams, JJ Barea, and Devin Harris, they've got a ton of injury risks there at point guard. Williams was not able to work out hardly at all off season due to that hernia surgery that he tried to play through in the playoffs. And he's never been someone who can maintain the most svelte figure, even in the best of times. And so I'd be curious to see what he looks like after basically having to take a summer off with that hernia issue. And, you know, they did sign Harrison Barnes. Do you look at Barnes as an upgrade or a downgrade from what Parsons gave them last year, when you consider that Parsons was limited early part of the year and obviously missed time at the end as well?
Upgrade in terms of total contribution, just because Barnes should be on the court for more time, and that means don't have to deal with replacements.
He's better on defense
also,
too.
Yeah, and the ability to play power forward could help them because they're not particularly deep at that spot. So if they actually use him as a three and some backup four, that could really help them.
Justin Anderson as well didn't really play hardly at all last year. He should be a solid fixture in the rotation. If they didn't have Dirk, I would actually be pretty positive about what these guys could do on defense. Harris still is pretty good on D. Matthews, Barnes, Justin Anderson, they could play small a lot. Barnes and Anderson, I think, can both guard fours pretty well. So I think they could actually be improved defensively were it not for Dirk, but they're always going to have Dirk on the floor during the key times. Maybe they'll be good on D when Dirk is out of the game, which I think was not necessarily the case before. Salah Mejri can at least provide some shot blocking, although he's coming back from arthroscopic surgery himself over the summer that prevented him from playing with his national team. So I don't know. I think there, of course, is also the risk of Dirk taking a major step back. We thought that would happen last year. We were wrong about that, but it just happens for these guys that they just lose it immediately around 38, 39, 40. It's really hard to predict what season that's going to be, whether it's Paul Pierce, Steve Nash, Kevin Garnett, whoever it might end up being. There is a season where the guys at this age are just done, you know, and you just never know kind of when that's going to be. And obviously this team's going to be a train wreck on offense without Dirk. I don't think they have anyone really who is a good creator. And I think they're actually even going to miss Raymond Felton a little bit. And Barea is coming off of surgery. So yeah, I think I will go with the under. All due respect to Carlisle and Dirk. I mean, they'll probably just end up burning me again, but I will go with the under. Not significantly, however.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Denver won 33 games last year. They really pretty much kept the band together, except they added a bunch of young guys. And their Vegas line is set at 34.5.
This is the RPM special this year, somewhat akin to Portland last year, though they don't have a talent on the level of Damian Lillard. But a lot of guys on this team who are young guys that people may not know, that were in smaller roles, that look good by the advanced stats, but maybe not as much in the box score, or just, you know, Jokic being a perfect example of that, although he is a pretty good PER too, but just didn't play that many minutes, isn't that well known. So I predicted 37 wins for them on my podcast with Adam Morris. I think that that is, I've seen no reason to deviate from that a couple weeks later now. So yeah, I think I feel pretty decent about the over, and I think those RPM projections, the Celtics was another one that they nailed last year. I think that when there's a huge difference between those and the line, I am inclined to trust those. Maybe, I don't know if they're going to win 40, which I think is what they're actually projected at. Do you remember that, by the way, what the RPM projects them at?
40.4.
Yeah, so I think I would have gone over with that anyway with these guys. I think last year they had an expected one loss of 33, so right where they're indicated by their one loss record. I mean, when you consider that Moutier missed a bunch of time and was a train wreck for most of the time that he did play on offense, they didn't have Wilson Chandler at all. Gallo missed the whole last 2 months of the season. Jokic barely played the first half of the year. Nurkic was a shell up until, and when he did play, was really bad. So, I mean, I don't see anyone on this team, maybe Darrell Arthur, who quietly had arthroscopic knee surgery that we didn't get a chance to talk about and is kind of working his way back in. Other than him, and maybe Jameer Nelson, I don't see anyone on this team who's going to be worse than last year.
Yeah. So when I did notes when the line came out, I had a stretch kind of explaining it. So why I wanted to mention with them that they won 33 at the beginning of the year, they won 33 last year. So if you remember, Moutier started last year as a disaster. He was the worst or one of the worst players in the league until he got hurt at the beginning of the year. Gallinari missed 29 games. Wilson Chandler missed the entire season. And Nikola Jokic, who was an RPM All-Star and a legitimately great player last year, you know, he was, I think he should have been either number two or number three in Rookie of the Year. I think he ended up being number three. Then he only averaged 21.7 minutes a game.
I love it when you're doing something else when I'm talking, by the way, because I just said every single thing that you're saying.
I was listening to it. I wanted to condense it. You did. I don't think you mentioned Wilson Chandler.
I meant to, but I didn't.
But so the reason for that is, so when you think about what they did, they could be, you know, that they can improve on that. And there is a lot of age related stuff with this team, you know, like that they have a lot of guys. They also will be playing young guys who will probably struggle a little bit early. Jamal Murray is the most obvious of these, but I'm pretty comfortable with the over here. I don't love it as much as you said, the RPM, it's 40.4. I don't love it as much as that, but I mean, I fully expect this team to win. Yeah, your 37 is fair, something in that range. And when you think about
how could they possibly be worse than they were last year? Like, you would be really hard pressed to construct a scenario in which that's the case. Maybe like backup point guard is a big problem because DJ Augustin played well for them and Nelson is done and Murray isn't ready to.
Well, if they trade Gallinari. If they kind of sink a little bit early and they trade Gallo for future assets, like that's really the way that it would happen. But yeah, they even,
he,
you know, like
missed,
they have some good front court depth.
He missed everything after the trade deadline last year anyway.
Yeah. And you Nurkic and Nurkic was really struggling last year. I think he'll be a lot better this year, too. And like he's an underappreciated part because his rookie year was strong. Like his rookie year was underrated. He was coming back from an injury. So they have a surprising amount of depth for a team that has been, you know, kind of where they are in the Western hierarchy. So, yeah, I like them a lot.
Well, let's take a quick break before we get to the Golden State Warriors to talk about Athletes Collective. We may admire athletes like Steph Curry and LeBron James, but wearing the same logos as they do when you work out isn't going to make you lift like them or play like them or look like them or anything else. Athletes Collective, thankfully, gives you great quality, great fitting activewear without those logos for 30 to 40% cheaper than the big brands. The stuff that I have from them, I know you have some of their stuff as well, Danny. I feel like it just kind of feels more substantial than some of the stuff, just kind of a little greater weight, higher quality than some of the stuff that I have from other brands. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and I've noticed that it's comfortable and it's versatile. I actually kind of, because the situation ended up dictating it, I used it as an undershirt when I went to a concert. And what I noticed about it was just that it was more sturdy and like it absorbed moisture in a better way than what I usually wear as kind of an undershirt. So now I've started doing that for those kind of settings as well.
Yeah, so I really enjoy their stuff. I've had them for about 6 months now, run it through the wash all the time. It's pre-shrunk, so if you're a single guy, you don't have to worry about like taking it out and drying it, which has been the case for some of the other kind of advanced fabric activewear that I've had. The stuff is holding up great so far. Really enjoy it. My girlfriend claims that I look good in it, and I'm sure she can be trusted on that. So athletescollective.com, the way to get started with them, go to their website and enter the promo code CAPSPACE, and that will get you 15% off
your first order. All orders include free shipping as well and returns to the US or Canada. And of course, there's a 100% satisfaction guarantee if for some reason you don't like their stuff. So athletescollective.com, enter the promo code CAPSPACE, get that 15% off your first order, and also, of course, let them know that you came from us. All right, Golden State, 66.5. Just when you first saw this line came out, this was the one that everyone really wanted to see. Were you surprised at all of where it landed?
Yeah, so I got struck by this. I ended up looking it up on Basketball Reference, and I've trotted out the stat a few times recently, but only 12 teams in NBA history have ever won 67 games, like, or more. You know, like, that, it's a really high number in terms of NBA history, and the Warriors have done it the last 2 years, which is crazy because I don't believe any team has ever done it 3 years in a row. So it is a really lofty number. Like, there are a lot of reasons to think that any team would be unlikely. And actually, the parallels that I used for the Warriors for this team to kind of whether that was a reasonable projection was not last year's Warriors team, which won 73, but the Spurs last year won 67, and the Warriors the prior year when they actually won the title instead of blowing a 3-1 lead, they won 67 as well. So those were more in line. And so you're kind of thinking, okay, how does this team fit in with those? And I think they're better.
This might be the most talented team in NBA history, at least if you look at it at the start of the season. We may feel differently at the end, but they've got, I think, the guy who's the best player in the league, very clearly, that had a top five offensive season of all time last year in Steph Curry. During the regular season, he clearly was the best player in the league, and we don't know what, if he had not gotten hurt, maybe he would have repeated that in the playoffs. Kevin Durant, clearly a top five player, and then you've got two other top 15 players. I don't know that you could ever have gone into a season where you looked at a team that had that level of talent in their top four guys, and their depth is actually totally good. Iguodala is good. I think their bench could actually be better than last year in some respects if those guys stay healthy. I think that Pachulia could, in the aggregate, actually give them more than Bogut did last year, although he's not quite the spectacular shot blocker that Bogut is. And David West is better than any big man they had coming off the bench last year. Sean Livingston is still pretty good. So with all that, I think they are going to be really good. On the other hand, they did win those 73 games last year. They were ridiculous in the clutch, probably the best clutch team of all time last year, and that didn't hold up in the playoffs. A lot of their guys were hurt for that, obviously. Well, it did hold up in the Oklahoma City series, did not hold, and the Portland series did not hold up during the Cleveland series, although there was only one game in that series that was close at the end, so it's only one game that we're talking about. But they only had an expected one loss of 65 wins last year. Their bench sucked, which was a big part of that, and they only played their best lineups not that often. They played those best lineups at the end of games, and that's why they were able to be so good at the end of games. So when you look at that, I mean, even if you look at them as a 65-win team baseline, they just added Kevin Durant from last year. And I think Steph is not going to be as good. Maybe Draymond won't be quite as good. But I think the only reason to me why they aren't going to go over is if they just get lazy on defense.
Defense is the big concern with this team because, you know, they lost Bogut, who was such a central part of their success on that end. And while Draymond justifiably was second.
What, like, how many good games did he actually really have?
Bogut. In the first half of the year, I thought he played pretty well. You know, he had a series of games. Later on, it was more shaky, but I thought he did. You know, it's not as much about games as he was I think he was top five in nylon calculus's rim protection, RPM. Like, it wasn't as obvious as it was the year before, but he was a positive on that end. And, you know, the offense was a concern, but this team also, like, you would think it would be, and it is, you know, a downgrade for their expectations in terms of the regular season wins, that it certainly appears that they are not prioritizing regular season wins this year in the same way that they did last year, especially if the rest of the West is not as competitive for the number one seed, which they do want to get. Like, that part of it, like, that's part of what got their numbers so insane last year, is that they had to push to get past the Spurs, and that's not going to be the case. However, this team is so good that their, you know, their 75% games, their 60% games are still going to beat just about everyone. And that's why I think this number, why they're going to do well. I've ballparked it at 68, 69. That's kind of where I'm sitting with it. But it is a lot harder to do this last year. Like, last year we did this little hemming and hawing, oh, the number looks high, and then we both said they were gonna do better, and then they won 73. It's harder than last year, but they have the talent. I think there's certainly an argument that they're the most talented NBA team we've ever seen. And in terms of regular season, I mean, there's so many different individuals that can take this team on their back for a given game and really win it for them. And that's
and they can withstand injury so well too, maybe more than I mean, they would still be the championship favorites to me if either Steph Curry or Kevin Durant were injured, you know? So
right.
They've got a lot of really kind of slack there to win games if somebody is out or resting or whatever.
Yeah, so we're both on the over, right?
Yes, I actually predicted 70 on the podcast with Ethan, so I'm going to stick with that. I like the this probably won't be one of my best bets because I do think that they could just shut it down or that they're just not going to try that hard on defense or whatever. But I think they're going to be really, really awesome. And you know, just this is more talent than any team in NBA history. So I think if any team deserves a line like this, and it fits together so well, too, I think and they don't have, not only do they have more frontline talent, but they don't have any enormous holes in the rest of the rotation, like, say, maybe the 2010-11 Heat did. So I really like the over here. Probably would be one of my, like, at least top 10 favorites in here.
Yeah, that's certainly fair. Houston Rockets. Last year, they won 41 games, and that will matter in my analysis. And this year, the line, after they had immense amounts of changes, the line is set at 41.5.
Yeah.
Why?
Go ahead.
Why the 41 matters is that they had, in a lot of ways, they had a season from hell last year. I mean, there was just so much just stuff going on with that team. Had a lot of guys, Demo, Terrence Jones, that were dealing with substantial injuries that underperformed their expectations, that underperformed their prior performance. And despite all of that, they still won 41 games. And to expect them, especially with, I would say, more talent on the team, at least at the start of the year, than they did last year, to expect them to do the same makes it a great bet. It's one of my favorite bets on the board.
Yeah, I like the over as well. The only thing that gives me pause about it is that maybe Dwight Howard was better than we thought he was last year, and that he was just really propping up this defense even more than we thought, or that maybe Capella just won't be ready. But they have Nene, who could play 20 minutes a game as well. So they're, and Demo as well could come back. Hopefully his qualifying offer actually is going to expire today. It'd be interesting to see what happens as we record this on a Saturday, but whether he comes back. But you have to imagine still he'll be on the team, and as a backup center or even a third combo big, he's someone who is probably above average at that spot. The shooting that they're going to have on this team is going to be ridiculous. I predicted them to win 46. I've really come around to them, at least for this year, after really hating that Anderson signing and to a lesser extent the Gordon signing. I think they recovered with renegotiating and extending Harden, which may have been part of the plan all along. And then also bringing in Nene for the room exception was fantastic. So with all that, I think 46 wins is what I predicted on the pod. I'm looking at that pretty well. I think this is going to be a top five offense. I'd be surprised if they're not. And I think they can be hopefully a little bit better than bottom five in defense. And I think Harden could actually be better than he was last year because he came in out of shape after that big ankle sprain that he had last year. So this is one that I do feel pretty strongly about. I think when I go through it, this will probably be one of my best bets over 41.5 for these guys.
Yeah, it absolutely is for me. And they have a lot of guys who will, why I think I disliked their offseason was the years that they gave a lot of years to guys that are probably not going to age well. And that doesn't matter at all in the present, you know, that doesn't hurt them. And there are a lot of reasons to think their offense could be just spectacular this year. The big question mark in terms of injury, because they're more resilient now with Eric Gordon, you know, they can handle that a little bit more. And D'Antoni also has done a wonderful job, even on bad teams, of getting usefulness out of low-end bench guys. So if they had to deal with, you know, getting deeper in their power forward rotation or something like that, D'Antoni's done a good job there. So I think this is a team that's going to do well in the regular season. The playoffs will be an experience, assuming they make it. But that isn't the question here. It's how many games they're going to win. I feel pretty comfortable that they're going to win more than 42.
The Clippers, they're over under 53.5. I am torn on this one. I will let you go first. I haven't actually quite decided yet.
This is one of the hardest ones on the board because it involves a lot of thinking about age-related regression, because last year the Clippers won 53 games despite everything that happened with Blake. And there is a reason to believe that, you know, a very good reason, that if he played more, that they would be better and that they could be substantially better. And I think there is a, you know, high 50s win team in here somewhere. But whenever you have a small point guard past the age of 30, you get freaked out with that. So you have to weigh all of those kinds of things. But one thing to note with them is that of their key players, only DeAndre played more than 75 games. And you could say that, you know, Price in some missed games for CP3, Mark Price in some missed games for JJ Redick and all that. But something else that I, why part of the reason I'm going with the over is remembering that Lance Stephenson and Paul Pierce played serious minutes for this time early for this team early in the season. And that helped that hurt them as well. And while their small forward depth is a problem, Rock Divers did a great job getting minimum guys. You know, I think that they're actually a deep team, not necessarily in terms of starters, but in terms of rotation level players. So this is not one I would bet if I were, you know, if I had to allocate money, but it is one, you know, I think they're going to go over.
I will tentatively, very tentatively go under. Chris Paul and Blake Griffin reportedly both 100% now. I'll kind of believe that when I see it. Griffin has been trending the wrong direction lately. Just not the same athlete that he was. He seems to get hurt every year. He's had all sorts of knee issues now in his career. I think they're going to miss Cole Aldrich a lot, who was very under. Cole Aldrich had a 21 PER last year off the bench. And while I think they did okay to get Spates and Brandon Bass as backup bigs, those guys are going to be okay, especially for the minimum. As you said, I don't think either of them is going to be as good as Aldrich was. Paul, I'm not as worried about a major decline for him. Yeah, he's small, but he doesn't really play like a small point guard anymore. It's all craft. His shooting is excellent. He likes to get to his spots at the elbow. He could take a step back on defense. That's probably what I'd more be worried about from him at this point. I think he's going to be pretty good. I think DeAndre Jordan actually might be starting to get to the point, especially offensively, where he loses some athleticism and isn't quite the same guy any longer. Jamal Crawford is going to continue to decline. I think Redick getting up in his free agent years, he'll be 32 now and struggled with injuries down the end of last year. That's a concern. Small forward being a bit of an open sore. Backup point guard, still I don't think they have an average backup point guard on this team. They're relying on Austin Rivers to do that. Not a ton of passing on the second unit, and the second unit really didn't fit together very well at times last year. So I think I will go under based on that, based on the health of Griffin. If you could convince me that Griffin was going to be healthy, if Griffin and Jordan and Paul were all going to play over 70 games for sure, I would feel good about the over. This is mostly a health-related reason to go under 53 wins, which is exactly what they had last year and also their expected one loss last year.
One other point I want to make, which I think is important for them, is that their coach and their GM are the same person. And so what that means is that there are circumstances if their structure, leadership structure was different, where you could see them being proactive, as I advocated for last year, and trading Chris Paul or trading Blake Griffin, because both those guys are going to be free agents. Doc Rivers is not going to do that. He isn't going to. So the idea of, let's say, the tanking or the just retooling concept, which might be the best thing for them long term, because both those guys are going to get paid and one or more of them could just leave of their own volition. That's not going to happen when Doc Rivers is running this team. And guess what? Doc Rivers is running this team.
The Lakers, they're over under 24.5. I think I will go with the under on these guys, although I am not nearly as adamant about it as I was last year when they were like 29.5. I thought it was actually, if not my best bet, one of them. I think that Luke Walton is going to be a huge upgrade at coach. Kobe Bryant might have been the most damaging player in the league last year. When you look at what he did on both ends, his huge usage rate and the fact that they didn't know whether he was going to be playing from game to game, how incredibly inefficient he was, all that, I think just getting him out of there is going to be a huge advancement for them. They've got a little bit more depth in the front line. Luol Deng at least can give them something approaching average defense on the wing. Mozgov, maybe he'll be okay this year. I think he'll still be a below average starting center, and I'm not sure that he's ever going to make it back necessarily from that knee injury at age 30, but he'll give them more than they got at center last year. Russell, Clarkson, Randall, those guys should all take a step forward. Ingram, I mean, he was probably better than at least the backup small forwards that they had last year, even though I don't think he's anywhere near ready. So I think they should be better in a lot of aspects this year. I'm just not quite ready to go there. And then what really seals the deal on the under for me is, yet again, the old top three protected pick.
And that's where I was going to go with it, because, as you know, it's one of my favorite issues, but it is extremely important this year. And what I'll give the basic rundown is that if the Lakers keep their pick this year, not only do they retain a top three pick, they also do not have to give Orlando an unprotected first round pick in 2019. So they're, if it's even close, that's a huge enough difference that you have to seriously consider it. I think they'll be a lot better.
If they keep their pick this year, would that rank as the greatest protected pick retention in NBA history?
I think it would have to, because hasn't it been 3 or 4 years? And it's top three protection is really hard. Like, it's not top five, top 10, where, you know, you can, if you get down there, like, top three protection isn't that likely, even if you have the, like, the second worst record. And so to be able to...
It was top five, 14 they had their pick out, right? But it was top five protection the last 2 years, and then this year it's top three. That would be pretty incredible, and it would be right up there with the Kings keeping the top 10 protected pick. If they could do that again this year, I think it'll have been all 7 years of the pick being top 10 protected. Like, you'd be hard-pressed to find any team that's been in the top 10 for 7 years in a row, not to mention one that's trying to keep its pick. And then, of course, Minnesota with some of those that they had, like the Mark Madsen, like, three-pointers game that 1 year, the Marco Jarić, Sam Cassell pick. Those are the two that they're competing with. But because this is so much higher, and you're just getting, like, great players, hopefully, at least for them, at least a very high draft picks by keeping the pick, I think I would probably have to vote this number one.
Yeah, and so I think the Lakers will be substantially better, because the coach upgrade is another thing, and you also have the issue related to just them actually rewarding guys who care on defense now. Like, Byron Scott just had this really messed up system and culture, and they were playing guys to keep Kobe happy and everything like that, and they can improve that. However, I think that their talent level is just, you know, it's around this 24-25 win range, and that's why I think it's a good line. So the protection tips it one way, and also just the lack of, you know, there are really three bad teams in the league this year, and everybody else is pretty good, so it'll be harder for them to pick up cheapies than it would be, let's say, if they had this talent level 2-3 years. Yeah. Not 2-3 years ago, last year.
And also, all the more tantalizing to try to keep the pick as well.
Yeah.
And to me, I think it's, if you really look at this roster, especially with Deng and Mozgov at their ages, there's nobody I think you could look at as someone who's going to be an above average player at their position for sure. Maybe Russell gets there. Randall was one of the worst players in the league last year from an efficiency standpoint on defense. Ingram is not going to be there. Clarkson, I mean, saying he's above average as a two guard is kind of pushing it at this point. Maybe some of those guys can get there. But as of right now, if you really look at the projection, I don't think there's any above average players on this team at their position. You know, someone who, I mean, I don't see anyone on this team who is a top 15 player in the league at their position, right?
I don't either.
Yeah. So I think with all that, I'm starting to feel better about the under, and even though they won 17 games last year, I think they'll improve. They'll have a little bit better of a culture. If it weren't for that incentive of the protected pick, I would be a little bit more torn, but remembering that, I think I feel pretty comfortable going under here. This is another one that's pretty interesting. Memphis at 43.5. If everyone is healthy, I think they're substantially better than that, if everyone is healthy.
Yeah, so originally, this is one of the few that changed over the last, you know, 2 weeks or whatever it was since the lines came out. And one of the reasons for me is just their point guard depth. And the fact that they're basically, so not only do I think that's going to be a problem that hurts them when they're 100%, that their backup ones are Wade Baldwin and whichever Harrison they have, that is a big problem. And
Andrew,
if
Harrison,
Conley misses Andrew Harrison, and if they miss any time, if Mike Conley misses any time, then they're dead in the water. Like, Chandler Parsons can help them from a creation standpoint, but if he's your only creator, you're going to be screwed. And then they have functional depth at certain positions, but not enough. And they have a lot of guys that not only have injury histories, which is concerning, but also are serious candidates for regression. Like Marc Gasol, we don't know exactly what he's going to be now. Zebo. And while I like JaMychal Green a lot, and Brandon Wright can be a nice backup, they don't really have guys that can take on that mantle if the stars aren't what they were.
Conley reportedly cleared for camp fully with that left Achilles issue that did not require surgery. But that's a little concerning, because the Achilles is not really something that heals on its own, to my understanding. And so it could be the type of thing where there's a little bit of a risk still that he might
suffer a full tear. That's obviously, if they lose him, their season is done. They're in the lottery. They do have a top five protected pick, but there's no way they're going to be able to tank for that. So at least I think the tanking risk is out of there. But most concerning to me, you talked about their depth at point guard. Their depth on the wing is also horrendous, and they're going to be starting Tony Allen at shooting guard. They've got Vince Carter and Troy Daniels backing him up, and then Chandler Parsons, who is not, has no timetable. Chris Wallace said the other day that he is still limited, and despite being 6 months removed from an arthroscopic knee procedure, which supposedly was minor, oh yeah, it's real minor, on the same knee where he just had like cartilage replacement microfracture-ish procedure the year before. If he's not a full go, and Chris Wallace is saying he might not even be ready for the start of the regular season, he doesn't have a timetable, maybe he'll be ready and they're not trying to put pressure on him, but that's a huge concern. Like, they're going to need him to play 35 minutes a game because it's James Ennis, Vince Carter, Troy Daniels. Jordan Adams is expected not to play at all this year even. So they have Wade Baldwin. You don't want him going to the two, or Andrew Harrison. So yeah, this their backup wings are big, big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, it's a major concern, and this is another one that it's going to be hard for them unless one of the guys they've already dug up really does well for them to pull it, because they have a lot of these outstanding trade obligations. So it's not like they can, if they're on that fringe, that they can trade a first to get somebody, you know, like the equivalent of the Markieff Morris deal. Like, they can't do that. They're not really allowed to in the near term. So that's going to hurt them a lot as well. So they can't recover from it that way. And I think they've done a nice job of kind of finding guys, but not really that kind of a caliber if they needed it, and they very well might.
Marc Gasol is supposed to miss games this year as well, just for maintenance, coming off that navicular fracture. That's the sort of thing that a lot of bigs in NBA history have suffered recurrences of. He also is very dependent upon being in great shape, and he had already taken quite a step back last year before he suffered that broken foot. Not a guy who has a tendency to get a little bit corpulent just with his body type. So if he has been able to work out all summer, I'd be very interested to see what kind of shape he comes into camp in. And then the more weight he has, the more chance he has of stressing that navicular bone and having to miss games or re-injuring it. So I'm going to go under on these guys. Just, I think they've got some potential to be pretty good, but man, I mean, between Parsons and Zach Randolph has not played all the games a lot of these years too. I mean, Vince Carter is going to be a key depth piece. Tony Allen is 35. He usually will suffer like a hamstring pull and miss 15 games at various points. They've got some decent depth with the bigs, with Brandon Wright, but he's another injury prone guy as well. So yeah, the more I think about these guys, I like their summer. I think they did the best job that they could, but I'm going to go under just due to the injury risk.
Yeah, I agree with that. Minnesota, one of the, I think this was the number I was the most surprised with where they put it, because I was kind of hoping it was going to be a little bit different, but they won 29 games last year and the line was set at 41.5.
What do you think of that?
It's high. I mean, I was hoping that it was going to be a little bit lower and I could be more optimistic about it. I am still going to go over, because something to remember with Minnesota is that they did have some issues last year, you know, with Sam Mitchell and all the tragedy with Flip that happened before the season and everything like that, is that after the All-Star break, they were legit. Like, their defense looked a lot better. Their offense seemed more cohesive. And Thibodeau's going to make a gigantic difference for them in terms of individual defense and probably some team defensive stuff. And they have the talent necessary to make this kind of a jump. Like, when you think about a team going up 12, 13, 14 wins, it takes a lot. But the analogy that I'm thinking about is that Bucks team 2 years ago that was young and that, you know, they probably played over their heads to make that big jump and make it into the playoffs. But Towns can do that. I think Wiggins, I said last year when we did a thing that he was the most overrated player in the league. I still stand by that at the time. If he can take some of that potential, especially physical potential, and turn that into useful production offensively and defensively, they can do that. And the big question that makes me doubt this is the possibility that they trade Ricky Rubio, who is an underrated, very useful guy, especially defensively. But I feel like if they're going to make that kind of a move, it'll be probably at the draft time next year, not during this year.
Yeah,
and the only reason they would do it is done.
Yeah, if they're close to the playoffs, I don't think they're going to trade Rubio. And if they go over, then they are close to the playoffs. So I think if they're close to this, I don't think you necessarily have to worry about that, at least this year. I do think that a trade next year, as you said, might be more realistic. I think there are two ways to look at this. One is, all right, expected one loss, 31-51 last year. So you need them to improve by 11 wins. And last year, there's maybe one guy on this team who is above average at his position, and that would be Karl Towns. And I think people are expecting him to take an Anthony Davis-like leap in year two. We might need to slow down on that just a little bit. I think he's going to be awesome. I don't necessarily like him playing with two bigs. He's going to be playing a lot of power forward, which I don't think is that great for him. And I think Tibbs is going to play two bigs nearly entirely. I think Towns can be amazing, but if you're like, oh, he's going to be in the MVP discussion, he's going to be a top 10 player this year, I think the odds are higher that he is not there than that he is this year, despite the fact I think he will get there eventually. This is only his second year. And Wiggins, as you mentioned, has a long, long way to go. So that's one way of looking at it, that is just a massive improvement that would be required. The other way of looking at it is, they completely punted their bench last year. They actually had a positive point differential when Rubio was on the floor. They were doing this Levine at point guard crap for two-thirds of the season as the backup point guard. That was terrible. They also were 28th in defense last year, which you say, hey, Tibbs is at least going to get them up to league average, right? You look at what he did, for example, with the Bulls, although people forget that that Bulls team was actually 10th in offense the year before Tibbs came in. So they're starting at a much better baseline than 28th. And then, in offense, they were 12th. So, and with all the young guys on the team, it'd be hard to imagine that they would be worse on offense this year, though Tibbs is not exactly Mr. Creativity. They did not shoot enough threes last year. You know, Sam Mitchell isn't exactly Mr. Creativity either. So I see it from both sides. I think they are going to be improved. I don't want to bet on this team to be 11 wins better. That just seems like, even with the coaching, even with the young talent, you're counting on everybody to make a huge leap, and I'm just not quite ready to do that. I think they'll be improved. They might be in the fringes of the playoff race at the end of the year, but I'm not going to absolutely count on that. And then, obviously, if there's an injury from Towns, then these guys are totally mediocre. So they don't, you can say that about a lot of teams, but, if he misses 10 or 15 games, I don't think they're necessarily going to be competitive in those games.
And we'll also have to see what happens with Gorgui Jang. If they might potentially trade him during the season, and they probably would be getting more of a future asset just because they already, they got Cole Aldrich to kind of replace him in that sense of at center. But maybe Tibbs wants to play those two together long term, make them the power forward center of the future. Don't really know with that yet. And I will mention this, just don't bet this line, because if you bet the over and they go under, you'll be really disappointed. And if you bet the under, you'll just feel like an ass.
So I've been in Europe for the past 2.5 weeks. I'm in London as I'm recording this. Then I'm going to New Orleans for 5 days. And I am sad to note that while I've been on this trip, I've fattened considerably. But the good news is that when we get back, we're scheduled to do the 3D body scanner with Naked Fitness. And you and I are going to have a little bit of a bet here to see who can lose the most body fat. Are you excited for that?
I'm excited, except for the fact that you're loading up beforehand, which is it's not cheating because it's within your lifestyle and what happened. But sure. I mean, anything that gives you an excuse to make your life, to make yourself fitter and to make your life better, I'm all about.
Well, I'm not intentionally doing it. I mean, we've been eating some great food over here, so I can't complain.
Sure. It's not, you're not competitive at all.
Yeah. I had the best Indian meal of my life at this place called Dishoom yesterday in London. It was awesome. If you're here, highly recommend trying it. But anyway, we are going to get back in shape. How long do you want to do this competition for? Like, do you think like 2 months? Is that like a reasonable amount of time?
Yeah, we could do from then until Christmas or around then, something in that range.
Yeah, no, that sounds a good idea. So anyway, I've been rambling, but naked.fit/capspace is how you can sign up to get your hands on the world's first home body scanner. You just step onto it. It spins you around in a circle in front of a mirror that has scanners, gives you a 3D image of your body, tells you what your body fat is. Danny and I are actually going to be posting our scans and like the heat maps that show where we are hopefully gaining muscle and losing fat due to our awesome fitness regimens, and we're going to be motivated by this and by publicly putting it out there. And you can be motivated as well if you sign up. They are going to be $1,000 when it goes on sale in the spring, but you can secure yours for $699 now going to naked.fit/capspace. Also lets them know that you came from us, and you only have to put down a $95 deposit. So naked.fit/capspace is how you learn more about that and hopefully get one. A lot of listeners have signed up already, and I hope you do too. All right, New Orleans, they were 36.5 is where it came out initially. They actually are up to 37.5 when I went over to William Hill here in London a bit ago. I am still going to go with the over, and I am hating myself for it.
I'm in exactly the same boat. I mean, it's so tough. I mean, Tyreek is I think he's targeting a December return. Drew Holiday's dealing with his wife's health issue.
Yeah, if it weren't for Drew, I would actually feel pretty confident in that. We just right. don't know when he's going to be back because you know his wife Lauren, who we send our best wishes to, actually just successfully delivered their child, but 6 weeks from now, I guess, is when her surgery is to have that benign tumor on her brain removed, and so you'd have to imagine it's going to be at least, you know, 2 months from now before he returns, if not later than that. And obviously he should take all the time that he needs. But, you know, they're relying on Tim Frazier now as the starter. But they do have a lot of backup depth with Langston Galloway, with Etuan Moore. They've got Solomon Hill. They at least have some young, healthy bodies where I think they could just avoid having just these spots in the rotation that are just complete black holes.
Last year, the only Pelicans that played more than 66 games were Omer Asik, Alonzo G, and Dante Cunningham. And Tyreek only played in 25 games. So even if he misses time, if we're drawing apples to apples, and they won 30 games last year. So I think that it's the right play. And last year, a big part of their story was that they couldn't withstand the insane injuries they had, particularly at point guard. And so this year they did a nice job. While you can criticize other parts of it, they're able to withstand that a lot better, and their overall talent level is improved. And one of the things that I like about them as well, you know, they didn't really get much in terms of the idea of a second star, and Buddy Hield is another criticism in that line, is that they just have guys that could end up outperforming their expectations. You know, Terrence Jones was a disaster last year. He could do better. Solomon Hill was mostly down and a little bit up. You know, if any of those guys really work out, it could help. And they're going to be put in a great situation playing next to Anthony Davis.
My hope for them getting better this year is just, I think they'll just be a lot better on defense. Ryan Anderson is gone. He was terrible on D. Eric Gordon is done. He was terrible on D. Hill, Moore, Galloway, Tim Frazier is okay. Holiday is pretty good. Hield, I think, is not going to be that great, but, you know, he can't be much worse than what Gordon gave them last year. I think he's a little bit underrated defensively, although it still is not going to be good. So I think that they were 27th in defense last year. I think that they can just get a lot better defensively, and that is my hope, that they're going to get a lot better on defense, and that'll be what they can do to really improve. And I think the reports on Anthony Davis are pretty solid, that he has no restrictions going into camp. I was really worried about that coming in. So if he can actually give them a full season, they won 31 last year, and they're only 18th in offense. I don't think they're going to do much better than that, just because they're not going to have enough creation or shooting. But I think the defense can get up to league average, and you know, I think they could win, you know, pretty close to it, just because AD, I think, is going to really carry them and get back to hopefully being the player that he was, and really be a defensive force with some actual decent defenders around him now.
Oklahoma City, another one of the lines that I thought was most interested to see what it was. And 45.5 seems pretty fair considering the returning talent and everything else like that. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I predicted 44 with Fred Katz. That was before we knew about the injury. Also, apparently, a re-break or a new break of the fifth metatarsal Jones fracture for Cameron Payne, which he initially sprained his ankle. Same thing, it sounds like, as what happened to Ben Simmons. It's Ronnie Price time now, and so that is more reason to believe
that the under is where we're going to have to go. They were going to need someone who could shoot a little bit. Payne at least is like an adequate three-point shooter, you would hope. Price is not that. I think he is a very below replacement level backup point guard, even at the best of times in his career, and now he's into his mid-30s almost. So with that being the case, I think just that their spacing, their offense, they have a lot of talent on this team, but they're just going to be far less than the sum of their parts on offense. And that's my big concern with them. I don't think they're going to be way under, but I think, you know, 43-44 wins is kind of what I see for these guys. And then there is even still the slight chance of a Westbrook trade as well. I don't expect that to happen, but if they're hovering around 500, maybe that's something that they're going to revisit.
I was amused that you talked about their spacing in the second unit in light of the Cameron Payne issues, but their spacing in the first unit is a lot more scary to me, because Westbrook is somebody who thrives, you know, who driving to the paint, not necessarily to score. He, you know, he sometimes struggles with the rim, but getting fouls. But teams are just going to cluster it in there, because depending on who they start, they're just not going to have that much out there that you really need to respect out to the range. And there are big questions on how Victor Oladipo is going to mesh with Westbrook, who is such a ball dominant player. I think it could work reasonably well defensively, just because Oladipo can engage on that end and they can do it. But when you have as many question marks as they do, and also keep in mind, so one of the, there are a couple different teams that you can use as a calibrator of sorts with them. One that I'm sure some people will use is Portland last year, because they were dominated by an all-star point guard, even though I don't think Lillard made the all-star game. He didn't. But, you know, they won 44 games, which is actually under their line, but pretty close. But in some ways, to me, I think it could be an issue more, especially after this injury, more like the Celtics, where they could be a good defensive team. But the difference between OKC and the Celtics was that the Celtics just had so much depth. They had so many different guys they could throw at problems.
And they had shooters, too.
Yeah, and so, but not as much on their second unit, but I think that the overall, like, just kind of issue there is that there are going to be some games that they just are, they're flat, their guys aren't hitting, and they're going to have trouble. But I love Steven Adams. I like a lot of the guys on this team. I like Robertson. I like, you know, Westbrook is Westbrook. And I think that it could work, and I like Billy Donovan a lot. I thought he figured a lot out towards the end of last season, but if I had to bet on this one, I would go under.
Phoenix, 26.5. I will leave this one for you to go first.
I am a Suns optimist. I am not always.
You sure weren't
sure
last year.
Well, no, not last year. But yeah, that's true. So I'm a Suns optimist when at certain moments in time. I love Eric Bledsoe, and they had, okay, so last season the Suns were they were outscored by 2.2 points per 100 possessions, or when Bledsoe was on the floor, and they ended the season at -7.6. So you could think about just kind of where they went, is that they just fell off the board. Bledsoe and Brandon Knight combined for 83 games played. So just the two of them together, that number should be higher. And they also, like, they might end up going with more of a youth movement, especially at the forward spots, just depending on what they do. But they have veterans now. Like, they have more competent guys. Jared Dudley can really help them. They have two centers. So I think that if this line had been set higher, I would have gone under. But at 26.5, I'm going to go over. And I think they'll win probably in the maybe the high 20s, something in that range. But they could even, you know, they could be around that, or maybe even go into the low 30s.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's too low, that they just were so bad at points last year. But they still had the point differential of a 24-win team last year. I think they can be 3 wins better than last year. Now, there are some reasons to go against that. Bledsoe has been cleared, but he had the meniscus repair. I think the stats are that about 20% of the time that meniscus repair will fail, and you'll have to actually have another surgery. So I think he's definitely an injury risk. Knight has struggled to stay healthy as well, but I do think that Booker can get a lot better, especially defensively, that'll really help them. They have some depth. PJ Tucker does have that back injury. He's maybe back for the start of the season, but you know, can't imagine he'll be 100%. And there's nobody really at small forward who is experienced, although I do think I am hopeful that they can get some more out of TJ Warren, another guy who was injured. I mean, they really just had nothing on this team by the end of the year, and just had stretches where they were losing, like, you know, going 2-23 and just crazy. I mean, I think Dudley is going to help at the four. Another reason maybe to think that they won't be as good, They could trade Chandler. If Marquise Chris or Dragan Bender just get entitlement minutes to develop, they're both going to be really bad this year. So that would be another issue. So I don't think that they, but this team was 28th in offense last year. Like, they're going to be better than that, especially if they're playing Dudley at the four, getting some shooting. And I think Tyson Chandler will be a little bit healthier. TJ Warren at least can give him some scoring if he's starting at small forward. Even if they play three guard lineups with Booker at small forward, well, that's going to be terrible on defense. At least, you know, that's better than the 28th ranked offense. So I think they definitely can get better offensively. They can at least be like the 20th offense and, you know, maybe a little bit better than the 25th ranked defense last year. So yeah, I like the over relatively substantially here also.
I like that you brought up Devin Booker. He looked great in summer league. He looked good in Team USA select team activities. He's a real talent. And, you know, we have to see how it'll work out with when they have all three of those guys healthy, but that's going to be a good problem for them to have. And, you know, if they want to move Chris and Bender along slowly, they can play TJ Warren and Jared Dudley. You know, they can start them. They can do a lot of different stuff. And I think that Alex Len showed something towards the end of last year, though we had an acrimonious negotiation in our rookie extension, in our mock rookie extension time. I do like Alex Len's potential. I just think he needs to show it more. And so they do have some of those players that can really outperform it. And they're, unlike some other teams, they're young guys, other than maybe Booker, don't have to show it this year. Like, they're not dependent on them outperforming expectations, as opposed to a team like, let's say, Minnesota, where their young guys really do have to perform this year for them to get even close to their number.
The other thing that does give me a little pause with these guys is I'm not sure how much I believe in Earl Watson as a coach. He definitely did some weird things last year, like playing Chandler and Len together down the end of the season. And while it is clear that the players support him and buy in and they lobbied for him to be retained, I'm not sure that he has shown much chops in the way of strategy or player usage yet. So I think that he's someone who might be a weakness for them, and that's potentially a reason to believe that they could underachieve their talent level. But 26.5, I mean, that's really low for this team. That, I mean, this is a team that had an over under in the 30s last year and was playing 500-ish ball, not even while they weren't getting anything from Markieff Morris either. It's not like losing him is really going to kill them. And I think they have the same guys that they had last year, and probably more development from the young guys. So I don't think they're going to win 36, but I think 26.5 is too low, just based on that the halo effect from what they did last year due to all the injuries and a lot of the toxic environment that was going on there early in the season, that I think that is impacting this line a little bit too much. Who is up next here?
The Portland Trailblazers.
Yeah, I said 46, and it's 46.5 is the line. I said that on the podcast with Eric Gunderson, so I will go with a very tentative under for these guys this year.
There is this conception that you kind of hear sometimes about, you know, Portland, that because they were new to the scene, people sometimes think they're younger than they are. This is not a super young team. And so when you think about the idea of how they're going to perform, whether you consider last year a baseline that they should improve on or whatever, I think they'll be pretty close to last year. They did get deeper. You know, they spent a ton of money. And while I think we both feel that it was, you know, kind of ill-suited in a lot of ways, the big question is, will they get a lot better in terms of the key guys like Lillard and McCollum? I think those guys are awfully close to their primes. And they stayed really healthy last year. Lillard and McCollum combined to miss 9 games, and they had 6 different players that appeared in 78 or more games. That's a lot. That's a lot of continuity. You never really expect that with any team. And while it seems like their medical staff did do a good job, that's a lot to predict. And they, you know, I guess part of the idea of Evan Turner was that he could allow them to withstand some of those injuries, like missed time due for those guys. But he's not that good where, oh, no, we don't have Damian Lillard, but look, Evan Turner's here, we're fine. You know, like, that's just not who he is. And also, they had such great chemistry and all that last year. Now, some of the guys who were big producers for them, very successful, are going to be spending a lot of time watching on the bench. And that is the sort of thing that can sow discord in a locker room, especially when a lot of players got paid too. So they're going to have to sort all this out. It's a more complicated scenario for Terry Stotts than some are appreciating.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I just don't think that they're necessarily going to get good enough on defense. I think that McCollum, while he had a wonderful year last year, could regress a little bit in terms of his shot making on long twos. Obviously, any injury potential for Lillard or for McCollum, it would be a disaster. Although I do like their depth at the other positions, I still don't think they have a single above average center on the roster. And, you know, I'm not sure that Turner is necessarily going to help them. I think we could be in a position where we're talking about a level of annoyance that he's playing over Mo Harkless or Alan Crabb, and that his spacing or lack thereof is really choking off their offense a little bit. So that's a concern. I still think they're going to be pretty good, but I'm still picking them to win two more games than last year. And when you consider how healthy they were last year, I think that's fair. I think they're going to get some improvement from some of the young guys, but that they have more depth this year. But I'm not willing to go beyond 46. So very, very tentative under.
One big point, we've talked about it a little bit, but I feel like I need to underscore this, considering we might not talk too much about Portland before the start of the season, is that Evan Turner is a guy who provides value offensively by having the ball in his hands. And he is on a team that has two players who are better than him at that. And so how they're going to strike that balance when CJ, it's probably more pertinent. It's a bigger problem when Lillard's on the floor, but it could be more obvious when it's McCollum and Turner, that you're just sitting there going, really, that's what you're turning out with here. And I think that's going to, you talked about him being an annoyance, and we'll have to see also defensively, because he's really vacillated over the course of his career. He was very good last year defensively, underrated for the Celtics, but other times in his career he was rough. And now that he just got seriously paid, you know, got the biggest contract of his life, whether that will take a little bit of a step back seems like a real potential worry point for this team.
San Antonio, 56.5. I'm going over. I think that this is actually one of my best bets on the board.
I'm going over too, but it isn't one of my best bets. But so the team, again, I try to find common points. And last year, the Toronto Raptors won 56 games with a point differential of plus 4.5. And the Spurs should be able to do that without too much of a problem. Losing Duncan really does hurt, but they were really good defensively, even when it was just Kawhi. Like, Kawhi was the defensive player of the year for a reason. So Powell, that switch is going to hurt them, but they still are ludicrously deep. Even though they're not nearly as, you know, nuts as they've been in prior years with losing Boris and Boban and a couple other, David West, but they have a lot of talent. That as long as they don't have this just like a couple of guys fall off the age cliff, they should be quite good.
Basketball Reference says they had the point differential of a 67 win team last year. Others, I think, with a slightly different formula, have said that they had a 70 win point differential last year. They're one of the greatest teams in NBA history during the regular season last year. One of the greatest defenses in NBA history during the regular season last year. They are losing Tim Duncan. They are losing David West. They are losing Diaw. But I think Danny Green can play better. Kawhi Leonard is still young enough to take a step forward. And I think they can get something out of Dwayne Dedman. I think actually offensively they're going to be better this year because Gasol is a much better offensive player than Duncan, who was basically a liability by that point last year. Gasol is still a good shooter and passer, so, and can get you some post-up buckets. In mismatches, I think actually he'll be a nice combination with Aldridge, because Gasol really can only punish bad post defenders now, but usually the other team's going to put their best post defender on Aldridge, and that means that Gasol then will be able to go to work to some extent as well. They're clearly going to be worse on defense. I think that's clear with David Lee playing, no West, no Diaw, no Duncan. Gasol, I think, actually can be better in their system, and they've got enough kind of high steal guys to avoid just being like the terrible turnover-forcing teams that Gasol's last few teams have been. And they're pretty good on the defensive glass as well, which has always been a problem for Gasol teams. There's a lot of guys who can help him out there. So I think to say that this team is going to be 13, 14 wins worse than they were last year, like, no way. I just don't see it. I mean, they've won more games than this every year since 2011, except for one in 2014-15. And I think that they're still going to be an outstanding team. Leonard could get even better potentially, and the coaching is great. So even though they are going to rest guys, I think that they're still going to be pretty darn good. And I predicted them for 59 wins, and I struggle to see how they're going to get worse than that. Unless, I mean, they are really dependent on Leonard. So if he misses time, then it's a problem. But I feel very strongly about this over.
Yeah, because even if Tony Parker takes a step back, which I fully expect this year, Patty Mills can take over some of the mantle as long as Pop is willing to, you know, kind of balance their minutes in that way. And Manu's a talented creator, and if Kyle Anderson can do anything, that can really help. And so this is one of the few teams that actually has options for one of the worst case scenarios for almost any franchise. And that is part of what makes San Antonio so special, is that they can do that.
Yeah, people are just forgetting how good they were last year during the regular season because they kind of flamed out in the playoffs.
That was one of the points that I made, I had in my write-up, was just that the people forgetting that. And I wanted to throw out the actual stat because it's enough to warrant it. The Spurs allowed 96.8 points, I think it was per 100 possessions, when Kawhi was out on the floor and Duncan was not. That's really
and Duncan,
good.
I mean, what did Duncan play? Like, he probably played like 40% of their minutes last year overall. Like, you know,
that sounds about right.
I mean, he's important. They were great when he was on the floor defensively, but I think it wasn't. And Gasol is still a quality shot blocker, like right at the basket. So I think that they're going to use him well defensively. I think he can get taken advantage of by certain teams and in certain matchups in the playoffs. Like, I don't think these guys are going to be as good of a playoff team as they would have been last year. But yeah, I think at this point, I also would like to see him play small a little bit more too with Leonard at the four. Hopefully we'll see some of that look now, especially if they finally had some success after trying that in the playoffs. So all of that, I think I really like the over here. Sacramento 32.5.
I like the over. I would love it a lot more if their point guard situation was anything better than catastrophic, but that's just the way it is. So one of the things I pulled for them was that last year DeMarcus Cousins played in 65 games and the Kings were dead even when he was on the court in net rating. So like basically they were even. And so if you think about that in terms of the rest of this team, it's like, okay, so if he can do that, they can do it. And their depth is better. You know, it's not better at point guard, but at every other spot, they've added contributors. Matt Barnes is really, I think, going to help them. They have just more guys to throw at the big man spots, which is a good thing. Aflalo is at least another guy to try. You know, like last year, they had a lot on Ben McLemore's shoulders. Now, if he works, great. If he doesn't work, it's okay. You can survive that. I like Tolliver. Like, there's just a lot to like with this team. And then the other part that we can't discount, while uncertainty and chaos will reign in Sacramento until it proves otherwise, Jaeger is well suited to handle that. And at the very least, you compare him to the prior year, and Carl added to that chaos. And so you have to think, well, at least it can be better than that.
I predicted 35 in the podcast with James Hamm that we did. I think Jaeger is the best coach that they've had in there since Rick Adelman. They still had a 34 win point differential despite just sitting everybody and their brother at the end and having just one of the most laughable non-competes that you'll ever see in an NBA game in their last game at Houston. The only concern that I have other than the point guard situation is the issue of, again, that top 10 protected pick, which they'll probably end up being kind of right on the borderline for. But so you got to kind of hope that they're a couple wins ahead of this and they still can delude themselves into going after the playoffs. So that's a concern. What do you think, how long do you think Collison's suspension will be for? I'm very interested to see, because at the time when there was all sorts of domestic violence issues in the news with the Ray Rice thing in the NFL, Jeff Taylor got like, what, it was like 25 games or something, right? Collison, I think, actually pleaded no contest. So, I mean, do you think he could, are we talking about like a 5-game suspension for him, a 3-game suspension? Are we talking like 20 games?
So Taylor also pleaded guilty. Like so there are parallels with that, and Taylor got 24. So I'm guessing my internal clock has said 10. Like, that's just kind of what I've been thinking in my head. But there is an insane amount of volatility with it, considering how much that affects this team. You know, that their backup point guards are Garrett Temple, who can't run an offense, and Ty Lawson, and maybe Jordan Farmer, but probably not Jordan Farmer. And so that it is a concern. If it's 10 games, I still think they're going to go over this. But if you start to, like, let's say they, you know, if some people start to worry about pressure of like, hey, why'd you give this backup guy 24 games and give Collison like half of that? That could be a problem for them.
Yeah, it could be. And I'm not as familiar with the details of the case. I'm sure that Adam Silver and the league disciplinary office will be making themselves familiar with it. But yeah, I think that however many games those are, and Collison also has never stayed particularly healthy throughout his career either, that they could be in big trouble. But I do think My reason for optimism with them is I think that they could actually get into the top half of the league in defense this year. I think they could be pretty decent on defense. Now, we'll see how much they play these young guys, but they just have plenty of decent combo forwards that they can throw around. And
they don't have that many young guys. Like this, their young guys basically are behind DeMarcus Cousins, and they're not going to play them over him as long as he's still on the team, which is a question mark. You know, this is, I feel like I say it every year, but this is a time when they could trade DeMarcus Cousins if things are going badly around the All-Star break. But, you know, I think that is more in line with something we talked about. Was it with Minnesota with, like, if things are going badly, they could go really badly. So you kind of do have to price that in. But I think that for me, that doesn't really change their odds too much, because they would only trade DeMarcus if they were on below that 34-35 win pace. So I'm not particularly concerned with that in that way. But yeah, I mean, so like Ben McLemore, they have Aaron Aflalo, so they have more risk mitigation. And they, you know, Omri Caspi, I think, will end up playing a fair amount with this team. I love Omri Caspi. I think that could work out well. And they just have guys now. Like, that's one of the big differences with this team. And, you know, last year they had all these dead spots on their bench because they had, you know, had guys like Dukan who just couldn't play. And now they're 2+ deep at every position, but one of the most important on the floor.
Does the prospect of a Rudy Gay trade, there was a story by Woj, clearly leaked by his agent, in which he said basically that Gay intends to opt out and leave, which is the closest thing to a trade request. So the idea of basically, hey, I'm going to leave after the end of the year, so trade me now, is kind of the idea there. You would imagine potentially that he could get moved. Does that change things for you at all? I don't think it does for me.
If they traded him before the season, it would, because he can actually create. He can be kind of a usage guy for this time that Collison is out. So, like, for that sort of standpoint. But outside of that, not really. I mean, they have shockingly decent depth at the three, depending on how they balance their roster. And so they can survive it. And with Gay, depending on what is on the board, I think it's very reasonable that you will get present talent as opposed to future assets, just because I think teams are going to be uncomfortable giving up, let's say, like a first for a rental player. But if they give you guys that are kind of more lottery tickety that are already on their team, then, you know, maybe those guys do well for you.
Utah, 47.5. I feel excellent about the over with these guys. And again, I think part of the reason why this line, I mean, it seems like a lot for a team that wasn't in the playoffs, hasn't been in the playoffs for quite some time. But again, this misses the impact of point differential. They had the point differential of a 46 win team last year, despite only winning 40 games. So if you're starting from that baseline, and now you look at Exum is back, everyone on the roster basically should be better. They added Dia, they added George Hill, they added Joe Johnson. I mean, all of that, Rudy Gobert wasn't particularly healthy. Derek Favors had that weird back injury where he missed a bunch of time. They have a ton of depth as well. Alec Burks missed, like, basically the whole year, though he still hasn't quite been cleared for contact yet, it sounds like, after having another surgery on his ankle. But nonetheless, they have so much depth. I think last year their bench was underratedly terrible. I really liked them. There's another one of those teams like Boston where they can survive injuries so well. I mean, even someone like Jeff Withey is, like, an adequate fourth big and can provide a reasonable facsimile of Gobert if he goes down again. So I think with the amount of depth that they have, all of that, I mean, there's a ton of reason to think that they're more than 1.5 wins better than they were last year. So I feel pretty good about this over.
If at the beginning of last year, let's say you theoretically didn't know that Exum was going to be hurt, you would say, well, the two places where they would have the most trouble withstanding an injury would be at point guard and then at big man. And not only did Exum miss the whole year, they also had a stretch where both Gobert and Favors were out at the same time, which really nuked them, because that's a big problem, because they didn't have a ton of depth at the spots combined. Withey did a great job. Now they have more combined depth by adding Boris Diaw. And George Hill is gigantic in this, because Utah has some of the best wing creators that are in the league. You know, they're not the elite. They're not Harden, LeBron, that type of guy. But in the next tier down, Rod Hood and Gordon Hayward are two of the better guys. George Hill is one of the best catch and shoot players in the league, especially for his position, which is a rare catch and shoot spot. He's a great defender, so he fits really well with what Utah's doing. And backing him up is Dante Exum, who was going to be their starter last year. And their third string guys now are better than their than their starters at the beginning of last year. You know, whether it's Shelvin Mack, Raul Neto, however that's going to work out. So all that's there. They have more depth on the interior because now with Trey Lyles, they can do more of a be flexible in terms of if he plays great, then you marginalize maybe Boris Diaw, you do something like that. And Joe Johnson really helps them too. Like, this is a team you talked about withstanding injuries. Like, they have one of the best benches in the league. And even if you pull one of those guys into the starters, their bench is still going to be quite good. So they'll do that. They'll be one of the best defensive teams. I just think this is going to be a really talented squad. I agree with you. I love the over here. And what makes it so why I'm so confident in it is that you think about the pathways to get below this. And there certainly are some. I'm not going to say that there are no way. There's no way that Utah finishes with less than, you know, 45 wins this year. It certainly is possible. But this is paralleling Charlotte last year. Why I love that line is that most of the reasonable outcomes are comfortably over that line. And that is what you want when you like a line in over-unders. That's what you're looking for.
I couldn't agree more. All right. So who do you like as far as like the divisions here?
So divisions here, it gets complicated because just the structure of it. So you have the Spurs that are the lingering just force in the Southwest, and then you have the Warriors in the Pacific. So I think that makes it hard. You look probably more to the more distant ones. Denver at 50-1, just because that's such a high number. But the one that intrigues me, and it's weird to say this because I'm not that high on them in terms of where these teams are going to end up, but Minnesota at 5-1, just because those are better odds than some of the other teams. And if you think that the rest of the Northwest is pretty close, then 5-1 is a fair shot that if they do what I expect them to do, that they're in that mix.
I certainly like Denver at 50-1 better than Minnesota, though.
So do
I. Just based on that RPM projection of 40, maybe Utah implodes. I mean, there doesn't really appear to be anyone who's going to just go crazy in this division, although I could see Utah getting like 53, 54 wins maybe. But if things go poorly for them and things go well for Denver, I mean, 50-1 is just so high that, I mean, I'm not going to use that as one of our bets in our little competition here. Another one that comes to mind for me is Houston at 15-1. I think that if Houston could just get their defense to average, and, you know, I could see
good
this
luck.
Being, I agree. But I think they're very plausibly could be a number two, number three offense in the whole league. And if San Antonio just wins, you know, 54 games, I could see Houston maybe getting to 55 in the upset. And, you know, at 15-1, that's not terrible odds for that. I think if you played this season 1,000 times, that Houston would probably win the division about, you know, maybe one out every 10 times or something like that. So I like that. Okay. Not really anything too sexy with the conference, again, with Golden State being so good. Oh, yeah.
Utah 50-1. I think that there is a chance that they could do that. And 50-1 is a really high number. And that I think that it's not the best bet in the world.
Yeah.
But I could talk myself into that if the Warriors, you know, if they suffer through some injuries or some surprises, like compare that to like Boston. Let's say, I mean, Utah isn't as good as Boston, but Boston's 8-1. Like if you were to look at 50-1 in the East, like you're starting to talk about teams like Orlando, and Utah has a much better chance of doing it than that.
They match up pretty well with the Warriors. If you had to look at the teams that might actually be able to stop them, they could hurt them on the offensive glass. They've got George Hill would be a great matchup for Curry. They've got some guys they can throw at Durant. Okay, they could play small if they need to. They have a lot of versatility. They could, Golden State doesn't really have anyone to guard Derek Favors. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, it's, and Utah played them really tough last year. If you squint real hard, you can see it. I think that's not terrible. The more I think about this Utah team, the fact that they're starting, if you really think about them starting from a 46 win baseline last year, if you actually believe that, you would have to think that I haven't done my official prediction for them yet, but I think, you know, probably 50 is going to be about where I'd put it. So yeah, I mean, any team winning that wins 50 games at 50-1 is not awful.
So for right now, Vegas, or the last number I saw, they have the Thunder's conference odds at 18-1 and the Jazz at 50. I'd say the Jazz have a better shot. The Jazz have a better shot of winning the conference than maybe. I would definitely at minimum have them fourth, and I might even move them up just because I think they're going to be a great playoff team.
All right, so should we do our official money bets here? Let's get these down.
Okay, So first I will ask a question. Are you okay with me putting like $2 on the Jazz at 50-1, or do they all have to be bets of like $5 or more?
No, I mean, I think we should even make it like $10 just to, because those kind of flyers. I mean, I guess, you know, we could do maybe like how about each of us reserves $5 for some sort of like division, or it has to do at least a minimum of $5 on some sort of division conference sort of odds like that.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. So, cause last year you had the Warriors and I didn't. So this will kind of level the playing field here, where we're kind of forced to do that. All right. So what is yours going to be for that one? Your division or conference or championship odds.
Okay. So are we saying that we can split that $5 though? Just to make it?
No. It's gotta be one bet, I think.
Oh, it's gotta be one bet.
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay. So if that has to be one bet, I'm going to go Charlotte winning the Southeast.
All right.
You let me go first.
I know. Well, I mean, I could still do it anyway. Yeah, you know, I think I just from a game theory standpoint, I think I will do that, because I believe in my abilities to beat you on the straight up over unders more than I do on these odds. So I think I'll just copy you on this, and then
what sucks is we're probably gonna have really similar ones on the other ones too. So
well, let's see. All right, so should we do? We'll do like. Do you think it's more of an advantage to go first? Because I haven't even done these ahead of time. I'm doing them right now off the top of my head.
Yeah, neither have I. So we're gonna both be doing this. How about this? We each do our top bet, and then we move through it sequentially. Is that more fair?
Or do you want to do one? That's fine. All right. So I will go first for number one, and then you go first for number two. Sorry.
And I'll like a snake. I'll do my first and second.
All right. I'm gonna go $50 Milwaukee under 38.5.
I'm going 55 under that. I was originally going to do 65, and I thought that was mean.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think, well, we got to do like minimum $10 bet on all these, I think. So,
right. I'm going to have three.
Okay. Here, since I'm holding my microphone in my hand, can you write these down while we go?
Yes, I will write them.
All right. What's your next one here?
So my next one is going to be, so that's 55 and 5. So I have 40 remaining. I'm going to do 30 on Houston over.
Wait, no. Each one has to be $10.
No, so I'm putting 30, so then my last one's going to be $10.
Oh, we're only doing four? I thought we were doing five.
Oh, do we have to do five? Okay.
No, that's fine. We do four. We can do four if you want.
Wait, if you can do five, you can do five if you want.
Yeah, I did at least pick five, so I think I'm... Okay. Yeah.
So my second is Houston with the over. If you want, I can get an extra one if you want to give me a second.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to go Houston over as well. Well, so are we allowed to do the Charlotte 39.5 since we actually like did these picks back then, even though the line has moved, or is that not fair?
I don't think that's fair, because we are incorporating new information. So
yeah, like, but I still would have done it anyway. But yeah, I guess the amount, I didn't write down the amount at that time. So yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So I will go for my second one here. I'm gonna go Spurs over, and I will put $20 on that. And then I have to go again, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I'll go Houston over, and I will go 15 on that.
My last one, I'm going to go with Kevin Pelton in RPM. I'm going to go Denver over 34.5.
That is a tempting one. However, I'm going to go with the Brooklyn Nets. If only so I have a reason to watch their late season games this year.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That's actually part of the reason why I didn't do that. But I almost... I'll tell listeners that I nearly, one of the ones I seriously considered was the Suns, just because I think that number's too low. I also considered the Kings, except for the Collison thing. But this was once you got down here a little bit, it got tough, because there are some that I like but don't love, and that kind of a thing. Like, I considered going under with the Knicks, but you know, it's like, they could do, I could see a pathway for that. And if the Charlotte line, if it hadn't moved up and we weren't playing those rules, that probably would have been my number two, not my number three.
Okay, so that was, so I've got Brooklyn, I've got San Antonio, I've got Bucks, and I've got, I didn't do my flyer yet, huh? Neither of us did that yet, did we?
Well, no, we're in our, it was Charlotte division.
Right? Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. So we both did $5 on that. And so I still have, I have to decide how much to do on Brooklyn. All right. So I'll go 15 on Brooklyn. And then I think my last one, I'm going to do
Did you do anything on Houston? That's the only thing I don't have in.
Yeah. I'll do 10 on Houston. I wanted to do the Jazz. The Jazz would have been my next one. We're optimists here. I'm surprised that we're really going with some overs here.
Well, I think some of the unders this year are just teams that could potentially do it. Like OKC, I think, is a good example of that. Like, I don't feel super good. Portland is another one, you know, like they could. And also, we're taking the Sixers off the board because that wouldn't be fair. So,
yeah. I mean, I would have loved if Indiana were just a couple of wins higher to bang that under. But I was surprised that Vegas actually went lower than I thought they would.
They listen to the Dunked On podcast, man.
All right, let's get out of here. This has gone on long enough. Follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. We are back to 5 days a week. We're going to be doing some more team previews over the next couple of weeks or so. Maybe break in for a few if there's some important news. And then pretty soon the season will be upon us, which I can't wait for. Also, thanks to everyone who gives us a review on iTunes. That really helps support the show as well. And don't forget about our sponsors for this week. The Naked 3D Fitness Tracker, naked.fit/capspace is how you can pre-order yours. And then also athletescollective.com. Use that capspace code, get 15% off your first order for great quality activewear without the logos. Talk to y'all next time.